Welcome to the KNEL Radio Podcast, your podcast for news, sports, music, and talk radio. KNEL Radio Podcast is your resource to local news and sports from the heart of Texas and the Texas Hill Country. Join us weekly for Hillbilly Hits radio show highlighting traditional country music and artists. And At Home with Debbie Rule, a talk show about home, family, and relationships. KNEL Radio Podcast, making a difference in your life today.
State Representative Andrew Murr, who represents District 53 in the Texas House of Representatives. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm good, Lynn. How are you doing this morning?
Well, I'm doing just great. We're all really well. Prompted the conversation with you about the District 53 because through the redistricting process after the census, McCulloch County is moving from its old location into District 53. And so, first of all, tell us a little bit about District 53 from your standpoint, the counties involved. And previously there were, 12 counties, and now it's growing.
That is correct. And I'll even take one more step back. We're all familiar with the process that every 10 years the federal government conducts a census. And then from that census, a couple of important things occur. The first is called apportionment, and that is the determination of the population of each state in the United States. And from that, a determination of exactly how many congressional seats each state will have. Those states that gain in population obviously gain in congressional seats, and those that lose in population end up losing one or more seats. And so this round, Texas actually picked up two congressional seats. And as a result of apportionment, if you take the state's population and you divide it by 150, which is the number of members in the Texas House, then each district should have approximately 194,000 residents, folks that live there. That being said, the district that I've had the privilege of serving for four terms was under population by almost 30,000 folks, and so it was looking to grow. We've seen an enormous amount of growth along the I-35 corridor, running from San Antonio up to Austin, up into the Dallas Metroplex area. And so consequently, you'll see districts in those areas shrink in size, and then those out in West Texas and in East Texas have to grow in size and in population in order to continue. And so the apportionment occurred, and then from that, the legislature is tasked with drawing the lines for Texas House, Texas Senate, U.S. Congress, and that includes the two new seats, and then finally the State Board of Education districts as well. And so those maps were finally occurred in special sessions, which finished up in October. So we've been literally in Austin almost the entire year. And then the governor signed those bills that created the maps into law. And, of course, they'll be attacking the courts. But right now, that is the anticipated new boundaries come 2023. And folks will actually run for election and reelection under the new districts now. So, the district I represent, which has 12 counties and runs from the Bexar County line to the Pecos River, includes a big swath of the Hill Country, and we'll actually have four additional counties, and very excited about that opportunity.
And the four counties are McCulloch County, and what are the others?
Pecos, which includes Fort Stockton, Upton, and Crane counties out west. And so the district will now run more than 23,000 square miles, which is just shy of the state of West Virginia as far as surface area.
It is it's really large. And so all the 12 original ones plus those four new ones all stay in the district.
That is correct. Yes, sir.
From your standpoint, how do you describe the district? Largely agricultural, the hill country sort of things. Getting out toward Pecos, that's a little bit different than Mason sort of terrain.
Of course. So the district right now includes Llano, Kerr, Bandera, Medina counties, along with Kimball, Mason, Menard, Edwards, Real, and then out west, Sutton, Schlacker, and Crockett. And one thing that I'll point out is it includes sub-regions of Texas that are categorized as the Hill Country, as West Texas, because as you go west, you run out of trees, and you do run into some oil and gas production, and then down to South Texas, because in Medina County, you go as far as a divide, you'll actually see, you know, palm trees that are able to survive year round. And so that ends up in that South Texas region where there's a lot of agriculture production and a phenomenal amount of our produce from there ends up in stores like HEB and on folks' dinner tables. So I would say that the district itself derives a lot of activity from agriculture and from, we'll call it, recreation and land use, where whether you're in Brady or in Menard or Junction, we've all experienced that the old style of raising sheep and goats has morphed a little bit into hunting and other recreational land use as probably the biggest economic driver locally, while we still have a lot of cattle production and a little bit of farming in the right areas. You'll see that, you know, when the hunters come to town, they spend a lot of money. They buy groceries, they eat out at the restaurants, and they pay for their leases, and they have all their toys worked on. And so that is a big economic driver to all of our small towns.
That's true. You were describing, you know, talking about the redistricting process. You were a member of the House Redistricting Committee. So you had a close up-hand look at the process of redistricting. And generally, how do you feel about the prospects here? You know, as you said, you go through the process, and there are folks who say that they plan to, you know, file suit and to object. Do you think they have what's the outlook for that? Is there much chance that they'll be successful?
Well, I don't necessarily think they'll be successful, no. It's a unique process. It really occurs every 10 years. And going through all of the committee hearings that we experienced, you'll have a lot of stakeholder groups from just a broad swath of Texas. But it does turn into a naturally partisan concept. And so a lot of the discussion centers around Democrat-oriented groups worried about their fair representation. They're a minority of the office holders. Currently in the Texas House, you have 83 Republicans, which means that you have 60-plus Democrats out of the 150. And so you see that. The process involves engagement with all of the House members whenever you're talking about the House map. So you visit with each House member to the extent that they want to talk about their preferences or their concerns or trying to keep their communities of interest together. The biggest driver is really population growth or population loss. And so the details of that will be broken down by not only county, but by precinct, voting precinct. And so in really urban areas where you see 30-plus members of the House come from Harris County, they don't look beyond their county boundaries very much. They're literally discussing neighborhoods and the voting patterns and the growth in certain areas as to how those neighborhoods go becomes very meaningful for them. In the high-growth areas, you will experience, and we saw that, where you end up losing some representation in rural Texas, which is what you and I, that's where we live and that's what we concern ourselves about, to the high-growth suburban and urban areas where we saw double-digit growth in places like Hays County, south of Austin, and in the counties that ring Harris County. And so that's where you saw the creation or movement of new districts, while we also experienced somewhat of a loss, especially in East Texas, of rural representation because the population growth just wasn't there.
Well, it's a constant struggle, and we've lived with it for many years of this, you know, sort of a different appeal and points of view from folks who are in the urban areas versus all of us out here in places like West Texas, where it's a long way to the next little town. You've been a member of the House now since 2014. How's that experience been over the years? How have you looked at it? What's your sort of approach to being a member of the House from this part of the world?
It's been an amazing experience. You know, I spent the 5 years before that serving as the county judge in Kimball County in Junction, and I was asked to step up and run whenever our longtime state representative chose not to run again. I will tell you that it is a constant amount of effort to educate other House members and the Senate and other statewide office holders about the needs of rural Texas, because oftentimes what you find is they're only worried about what they see every day. And if they don't live in a town with just a couple of stoplights and that thrives off of being small and local, they tend to think big picture, and one size fits all never works well for rural Texas. And so we see a constant level of discussion, a sense education, if you will, of other legislators about what works well and what doesn't work well when they come to those concepts. And I think that's probably been one of my focal points, is you constantly beat the drum of rural goals, and that includes everything from property taxes to making sure that our farmers and ranchers are well protected from liability, and that their ability to put food on the table and clothes on our back is not limited by policy decisions that have unintended consequences.
As you look back at this session that just ended, as you said, you've been in session almost all year long with the special sessions. What is, from your standpoint, the key things that happened in this session for people in this district?
Yes, sir. So real quick, I always try to remind folks that in Texas, the legislature only meets every other year for 5 months. And so our regular session occurred from January to the end of May. But a month later, we were back in special session. The governor is the only person that can call a special session, and each one lasts 30 days. And so we had special sessions in July that spanned July, August, September, and October. And as a result of that, we anticipated that we would have census data late, and so maps were drawn. We also saw the disbursement of billions of dollars in COVID-related funds from the federal government to reimburse everybody from local governments for the expenses related to COVID-19 to shoring up the border, which we have now spent an unprecedented amount of money towards trying to secure the border in the state level and doing everything that we can in that capacity, to the tune of almost $3 billion. We've talked a lot about property taxes, but nobody has wanted to really peel back some layers there and have the very serious policy discussions that I advocate for, which would be abolishing a portion of our property taxes as we know them and going to another source to fund public education without reducing spending for public education. We also saw, and the reason for the initial first special session was the passage of an election integrity bill, which the first and second special sessions I was tasked with carrying in the House, and we spent a phenomenal amount of time crafting that legislation, going through a total of 30-something hours, both on floor debate and in committee debate, just shepherding that bill across the finish line. And at the end of the day, that bill is what caused Democrats to flee Texas, break a quorum in the Texas House, and go to D.C. for weeks on end. But I will point out that you don't hear many discussion about it anymore because it was good policy, and we see that its implementation is appropriate in making sure that all valid votes are counted and the folks that have the right to vote are able to vote. And so very important process, but that took a lot of our time during the summer to do.
As you look ahead, you're going to be campaigning again fairly soon for the next round of the election. What are you going to be focusing on next time as you look toward the future with being in the House?
I continue to talk to my colleagues about the need for true property tax reform. I really do think that if you take a pie chart of everything that we pay towards property taxes, across the state, over half of what we pay goes to public education. And I fully support public education, and I want us to continue the same funding levels, but I do think that we could abolish M&O school property taxes at the local level and come up with a different way to pay for it. And whether you're in McCullough County, Menard, or Kimball County, we would see our property taxes drop by 50% to 70%. And I think that's really what we owe our constituents, to have that serious discussion. I know if it was easy to do, we would already have seen a win there. And you know, that requires folks to sit down, lock themselves in a room, and have that talk. So I will continue to advocate for that. I believe that we're going to see additional consequences on land use resulting from chronic wasting disease in whitetail deer. We've already seen a zone that's been enacted in Kimball County. And so I think that there, we need to navigate the challenging waters there on policy, because that's going to affect folks' livelihood, however you look at it. And I think that's very serious. I think that you're going to continue to see some desires or concerns about individual liberties and freedoms. And so we want to make sure that the state passes good policy to put in place that we prioritize the individual over the collective policy that, that is advocated, especially at the federal level.
Well, you were we were scheduled to talk yesterday, but you weren't able to make that appointment because of a death in Junction of a person that had a big impact on the community.
Yeah, and at first, I apologize for that. I was asked to serve as the pallbearer, and Frederica Wyatt passed away. She was 91 years old, so we celebrate her life, but she actually served as the first woman mayor of the city of Junction back in the early 1970s. And then after serving as mayor, she continued to serve the city as the city secretary, which is the equivalency of a city manager, and did so for a long, multi-decade career. When she finished that, she actually became our de facto county historian and was chairman emeritus of the County Historical Commission for many years. And there wasn't a historical marker, a gravesite, or a family story that wasn't known to her. She was a resource known throughout the state of Texas. And so we celebrated her life yesterday, and that was the only reason why I wasn't able to talk to you. And I pointed out because her accomplishments are something that we're very proud of.
Well, that is a remarkable remarkable resume for all of that. And so it's well worth it, and certainly appreciate that. We really appreciate being able to talk with you, and look forward to McCullough County moving into District 53, and it's sort of it absolutely seems to really fit because McCullough County, Mason, Menard, all the other counties, we all have a great deal in common, and so it works out well. So
we do, and our current judicial district actually overlaps. We share adult and juvenile probation services. All of our counties do. And so it is a natural fit, and we fall into the same Concha Valley COG region as Menard and Mason and Kimball and other counties. So it really is a true fit. I actually, when I'm not chasing cows or doing public service, I do practice law in Junction, and so part of that brings me to the courthouse right there in Brady, and I get to come over from time to time. So it's not unfamiliar territory to me, and I'm very familiar with a lot of the officials and a lot of the citizens that are there. So I'm excited about it.
Very good. Well, we're excited about moving forward with it and looking for it.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to visit with you.
I do appreciate your doing it. And, again, State Representative Andrew Murr, who represents District 53, and it will be where McCullough County is moving into that one as part of redistricting. We appreciate a great deal.
All right. Well, God bless, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the KNEL Radio Podcast. Be sure to tune in live to KNEL 95.3 FM and KNEL 1490 AM and KNELradio.com. For more KNEL Radio Podcast, including KNEL Sports, visit KNELradio.com homepage and click on the podcast of your choice to listen, download, and enjoy. KNEL Radio Podcast, making a difference. Thank you for listening today.